It's good to be back all together. It's great to be able to offer a different menu over the summer. And I hope everybody's had a copy of this, which lets you know what we're doing up until Christmas. Today, we're just looking at the book of Haggai. If you'd like to find a Bible in front of you, it's page 949. I'd particularly like you to do that because it was my bad. I gave the Sealy's not a long enough passage. It actually goes on to 9. So I'm just going to read 6 to 9, but it'd be great if you keep the Bible in front of you, even the all of you, so that you make sure I'm actually preaching what we should be doing. I'm keeping the Bible. So I'm just going to look at Haggai 2 from 6 to 9. This is what the Lord Almighty says. In a little while, I will once more shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land. And that's where Alan left us, on a cliffhanger. I will shake all nations, and the desired of all nations will come, and I will fill the house with glory, says the Lord. The silver is mine and the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. The glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house, says the Lord Almighty. And in this place I will grant peace, declares the Lord Almighty. So keep your Bibles open. But in order to understand this passage, we need to go back 16 years to the year 536 BC. Amazing thing happened in 536 BC. Cyrus, the king of Babylon, decided it'd be a good idea to let many of the exiled people of God who wanted to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple of the Lord. He even gave back all of the precious items used in worship that his predecessor, Nebuchadnezzar, had pillaged from the temple before it was ransacked and destroyed. And Cyrus made arrangements for freewill offerings to be taken to pay for this work. This is something that just does not happen. A king, a president or a prime minister giving express permission for as many of their really valued, taken at against the will, workforce, as many who would like to out of that group to return to their homeland and for their administration to help resource the costs of that great big project that they're going to do. I can't think of a contemporary equivalent because these things just do not happen. This was a work of God. The people of God had been living in exile for 70 years. They'd become established and settled, as they were told to by Jeremiah. And they were used to the magnificence and the grandeur and the luxury of Babylon. Their corporate memory of home had all but faded. But for a few thousand of those who heard what Cyrus had said, they hadn't forgotten. This was an answer to their prayer. This was their heart's desire to return to their homeland, to rebuild the temple and bring God honor and glory. They could worship him there. So with the blessing of Babylon, 42,000 people chose to return to Jerusalem under the leadership of Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest. These 42K were the good guys, the right people in the right place, wanting to do the right thing for the right reasons. They were the right people because they were the individuals and families who were prepared to leave the luxury and security of a place where they had put down roots. Home. 70 years. That's an awful long time. They had the courage, these people, and the faith to leave an established and secure way of life and return to a desolated land and a pile of rubble that was once the city of God. And they did all this because they wanted to bring honor to God. They were the right people. It was the right place because at that time, the only acceptable place to offer appropriate and right worship to God was in the temple in Jerusalem. It was the right place. And it was the right work because as soon as these people arrived in Jerusalem, they took up an offering, 42,000. they got £4 million. Amazing generosity. And this money enabled them to clear the rubble, to employ masons and carpenters and hauliers to bring the logs in, who would join them in rebuilding the fantastic temple. These guys really clearly wanted to serve God and put him first. Good guys. So what happened to them? After the immediate rush of enthusiasm, in 536, neighboring factions started to make things difficult. They certainly didn't want the temple to be rebuilt, so they became hostile, and they made life difficult and dangerous for the 42K. These neighbors also put pressure on Cyrus' predecessor. Cyrus had died, and they put pressure to stop the development. So the few who had returned became discouraged, disheartened, and afraid. They didn't believe they had what it took to restore the temple, that grand, fantastic building. And they knew that rebuilding the temple was antagonizing their neighbors. So over a period of months, they retreated to their homes. They got on with life, and they got used to worshiping God and presenting their offerings in ruins. And this is where we jump in the narrative of Haggai. 16 years have passed, we're now in 520, and the temple remains are at foundation level. Granted, the altar had been set up and daily worship and offerings were able to be given, but despite the remit from Cyrus and the generous offering and the reason they had come, the temple remained unbuilt. God knew the given excuse that people were saying. He said to Haggai, "These people say the time has not yet come to rebuild the Lord's house." And yet, that was exactly why they left. So God poses a question that reveals the people's real priorities. Is it time for you yourself to be living in your paneled houses while this house remains with holes in it? Apparently it's not time to build my house, but you seem to have found plenty of time to build yours. Lovely homes. Ouch. God doesn't always pull his punches. However, God knows he's dealing with the good guys, the ones who had left the luxury and the stability of Babylon behind. He knows it was their intention to honor him and rebuild the temple, but they'd lost their way, forgotten their intention, and in their despondency and fear, they basically become secular farmers and householders. So he says to the good guys, think for yourself, reflect. What has happened to you? What have you become? What are your priorities? And where does my house and where do I fit in the equation? The phrase comes 3 times in this short book. Give careful thought to your ways. He's not going to do the thinking for them. And he just says to them, give careful thought to your ways. Always. Think for yourself. There was a time when you longed to worship me properly, when you wanted to honor me and giving your best, to serve me with all your heart. You gave of yourself, you gave of your money, but this is no longer your passion. Give careful thought to your ways. You've built your homes. You've tended your farms and you've accumulated a lot of stuff. And yet you remain discontent, unsatisfied, unfulfilled. You're hard, working hard, but you have little to show for it. He says it in phrases like, you've planted a lot, but you've harvested little. And why is this the case? Because you've lost your focus, your way. Life has taken over and you're lining your own nest. You're lining your own pockets. You're looking to your own interests, and you were meant for more than this. Look up. It's God, the Creator, who enables the sun to rise, the crops to grow, the rain to fall. It is God who has the power to drive away fear. It is God who is the worthy focus and center of our lives. And he's just been left out of the equation. Through Haggai, God calls the good people back. And because they're the good guys, people in their heart of hearts want to please God, they respond. They obey. They quickly get on with the work that God had originally asked them to do, serving him to the best of their ability. And as they respond in obedience, God is gentle with them. He knows that what he's asking of them is a big thing, a big ask, especially for those who can remember the glory days, the splendor of Solomon's temple. They look at the rubble around them and think, it can never be done. They compare what was to what is possible now, and they realize it will never be that good. God doesn't cover up the enormity of the task or what they've lost. Who of you is left who saw the former of this glory? How does it look for you now? Pitiful, isn't it? Does it not seem to you like nothing? He understands. He doesn't just expect them to get on with it. He shows he understands. He knows what they've lost, and he shares their grief. But he does not stay there. He rallies them. He calls them to be strong, to cause them to work, every single one of them, all the people. For I am with you. Every person has a role. Every person has a purpose. Every person has a part to play. And he calls the people to be strong. And he reminds them they're not alone. They don't have to be strong in their own strength. They have Almighty working alongside them. They are doing his work. He remains with them by his Spirit. So they're not to compare. They're not to be despondent. They're not to fear. They're to be strong. Now, are you ever asked to be strong if what you've been asked to do is risk-free? No. What they've been asked to do is not simple or without risk. It's a costly endeavor, but it's still one to which all the community is called. A work for which they're to give their best, knowing that God is with them, and to help those who would think back and compare, who struggle to imagine what the temple could possibly be like. God paints that picture. He shares his vision. In a little while, I will once more shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land. I will shake all nations, and what is desired for nations will come. And I will fill this house with glory. The silver is mine and the gold is mine. The glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house. And in this place, I will grant peace. You've been despondent. You've got on with your own lives. But this is the work I've called you to. Be strong. I am with you, and it's going to be better. I have the whole world's resources at my disposal. All of the riches and minerals, the soils and the rocks are mine. What is currently rubble will be filled with my glory, and it's going to be greater. And I'll grant peace. It's going to be fantastic. Better than before. These good guys had journeyed from Babylon some 16 years before to rebuild the temple, but be despondent, got wrapped up in their own lives and their own priorities. But God had not given up on them. And through the prophet Haggai, he asked them to reflect on what they had become. In Bible speak, they would say this is a kairos moment. One of those very important moments when God breaks into time. It's a moment when God says, wake up. It's a moment when God says, this is a life-changing moment. God was saying to these people, yes, for 16 years you've passed your way, but work with me. Come back. Be strong. Serve me. Regain your identity and purpose as the people of God. And they responded in obedience. They recognized what God was doing. They recognized his voice through Haggai, and they caught the vision of the future. And they grasped it with both hands. Within 3 weeks of God speaking through Haggai, they had gathered and begun work with the hope of God's glory and the promise of his peace firmly in their minds. Today could be a Kairos moment for us too. God breaking into our time with a wake-up call, a life-changing moment. We are the good guys. We're the people who at one time desired to honour God with all our hearts. We've said as we were baptised that Jesus is Lord and we want to serve him. We've invested of ourselves and our resources in working towards seeing God's glory in this place. And God is saying to us through the prophet Haggai, give careful thought to your ways. What are your priorities now? What are you investing in? Do you have plenty of food and drink and clothes and money, and yet still feel discontent, unsatisfied, unfulfilled? Well, that's because you were made for more than this. God is the center. Is your time, your resources so tied up with your own lifestyle, your family, the home, your work, that the work of God is impoverished in ruins, not full of the glory that he has painted the picture for, what it could be? Do we still love God with all our heart and soul and mind and strength? Or like those people, are we effectively living secular lives? Each one of us may have a different answer. Each one of us, though, needs to give careful thought to our ways, to grasp with two hands this Kairos moment, because in 2016, God is still God. He is still the creator, the one who enables the sun to rise, the crops to grow, the rain to fall. It is God who has the power to drive away fear. It is God who is the worthy focus and center of our lives. Have we left him out of our equation in our lives? And if we have, the good news is God is still wanting to work with us. He knows we're the good guys. That in our heart of hearts, we want to please him, we want to obey him, we want to serve him to the best of our ability. And we need to be real. What God is asking of us today, as it was in 520 BC, is not easy or without risk. We have been asked to work alongside God to enable his greater glory, Jesus, to be seen in this place at this time, Airfield in Thornhill and Thornhill Park. It'll be different work to rebuilding the temple, but we have 25,500 people in this neighborhood who need to see and experience the magnificence of God, the mercy of God, the love of God, the peace of God, and to be shown that they can be reconnected to him, to have purpose and bring him pleasure and honor. And we can do this. We don't have to be defined by the past or worried about what it may look like in the future. That will only distract and discourage us. God has the vision for how his glory is going to be revealed in this time. It's his work. He is with us. He will paint the picture. He will tell us. We need to recognize his call, be strong in him, depend on him, listen to him, and obey him. God has called every single one of us to this time, this place. God is always incarnated. He was through Haggai, he was through Jesus, he is through us. It's always in flesh and blood. He has called us to this time and this place to enable people here to know how to honor and worship him, to know he's always with us and to the greater glory. To experience his peace. So can we grasp this Kairos moment and respond to obedience? I'm not going to give you a piece of paper or ask you to stand. I'm going to ask you to come to this week of prayer. In order for the people of God to know for sure the work he's called us to do for this next season, we need to pray and pray together. The verse I put on the email: unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. We don't want to waste our time. This next week is set aside specifically to demonstrate our desire to hear from God, to prioritize Him, to ensure we're doing His work. We want to bring the wider community to Him in prayer, to listen to Him, to be attentive to His guidance. We, His people, are called to this work, whether you are 13 or 100. Please come this week if this is the Kairos moment for you. We're meeting at so many different times, you can see the timetable. Something will fit for you. Everyone will be able to make at least one section. And I would urge you, if it is your desire to obey and serve God at this time, to come. Secondly, a reason to show your response. I've recently heard several of our group and ministry leaders saying they are struggling to find folks willing to commit to regularly serving or go on rotas. Everything we do here is with the express purpose of serving God and our local community. It's the work we're called to do. We're not rebuilding a temple. This is the work. So I'd ask at the start of this school year that each of us spends time reflecting on God's message through Haggai. Give careful thought to your ways, to ask yourselves whether you're too slipped into lining your nests, living for ourselves. I'd love to hear in a week or two from group and ministry leaders that many of us have responded in obedience to this Kairos moment, this opportunity to serve God and put Him first, and that we are all playing our part in the work that God has given us to do. This is the time. This is the place. Be strong, knowing that God is with us. The vision He has given us to fulfill, and bring the hope of God's greater glory and the promise of His peace for ourselves and for our community. Let's hold this in our hearts and minds. Let us give careful thoughts to our ways.